morning. Hopefully everyone... Someone wave in back if you can hear us. We all wave. Good morning. Open the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. This morning we are starting our first hearings. We had hearings on the double majority and a conversation on school capital. And today we're going to look at a series of three bills related to school impact fees, system development charges, and that whole arena. And this is our first hearing, I believe, this legislative session on this topic. And so we're glad to use our field hearing, the first field hearing for this committee, to go out to the school that I certainly know well and the district that is experiencing high growth. So with that, Senator Starr, Senator Monroe, since we're at a field hearing, I don't know if you want a few words of introduction. Senator Starr represents the very close to here.
I'm Bruce Starr. I represent the Senate District 15. It's a community that's built from North Plains, running into Forest Grove in Western Washington County. Only about 15 minutes to get here this morning, and appreciate the opportunity not to have to drive the Senate. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, I'm Senator Rod Monroe. I represent the district in Mid-Multnomah County, kind of the eastern part of Portland and Happy Valley. I am a former high school teacher. I taught at Tigard Senior High School for 21 years and then did some adjunct professor work. Been involved in education all my life, 10 years on the David Douglas School Board, and currently, besides serving as a state senator, I'm on the Mount Hood Community College Board. So it's a great deal of pleasure to be here. When I was at Tigard, we used to just love being Beaverton.
Those are words we don't hear so much. He's got my competitive instinct. I know the Senator started on this meeting about the Hillsborough versus Beaverton. Very welcome, though. So here we go. The gauntlet has been laid. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 45, 366, and Senate Bill 44 in a moment. The folks, we are over capacity, so I know there are seats on the side. So John Charles has found a good standing position over here, and we can try to bring in chairs on the other side also so that folks don't have to stand if coming in there. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 45, 366, and Senate Bill 44. Steve Meyer will discuss and introduce these three bills.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. The three bills that we have up for our public hearing today deal with funding capital improvements for school districts. I'm going to go in a slightly different order than the announcement. The Senate Bill 44 deals with allowing a method to distribute funds from the Education Stability Fund for the money that's spent in capital funding. It would allow the Department of Education to make matching grants to school districts from the capital sub-account for capital costs. Also require the district to align the Department of Education and have secure capital funding for the state matching program.
questions for Ms. Meyer. We have a great deal of testimony. The folks haven't signed up to testify but would like to testify. We have 2 hours scheduled, so we'd ask the folks if it's possible to keep your comments as brief as possible. And we do have a sheet. I can't see Robin way back there, but she's right behind me. So she is updating the sheet, but if you'd like to testify, this will be in the back of the room. Just sign it, and we will try to get through everyone by noon today. Yes, if you come from a distance, we have one from Springfield, so we'll try to get you on as early as possible. Come from a distance. Let Robin, who is waving paper, let her know, and we'll try to work in. Our first panel is Julie, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, Vopel, Tom Olson, and Superintendent Naso. We have two chairs today. So we'll do Julie Vopel and Tom Olson. Superintendent Naso, if you are here, you found a chair. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, we're here as Stanford Children members, and we'd just like to ask you to have our Stanford Children members here stand. Stanford Children members stand up.
Very appropriate to stand.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 366 and in opposition to Senate Bill 45. My name is Julie Vopel. I live in North Cochran School District, where my three teenagers attend school. I joined Stanford Children 3 years ago with the intention of joining like-minded people in an effort to make our community a good place for kids, starting with having high-quality schools I knew our kids deserved. As we watched new developments go up almost daily, our local Stanford Children team raised the issue of why developers were allowed to build without regard to their impact on school. A few months later, we attended our first Clackamas County Planning Commission meeting and learned that Windswept Waters, a 600 home development, would be allowed to proceed in spite of our superintendent's protests that it would cause additional overcrowding in our schools that already use trailers for portable classrooms. My daughter's entire sixth grade class was being held in the community center as our elementary school had over 800 children enrolled. We knew something had to change. We talked to county commissioners, planners, and legislators, and here's what we learned. We learned that schools had no voice in the planning process, that schools were not considered part of the critical infrastructure, unlike roads, sewers, and parks. So we started research to learn what worked in other states. We learned that 11 other states were successfully using school impact fees, including California and Washington. In fact, many residents who moved from those states believe impact fees were in place in Oregon. We also learned that bonds were the only tool available to school districts to get money for new school construction or renovation. 75% of states provide state support for school construction. Oregon does not. We knew that bonds were often hard to pass. Our Stanford Children chapter and many others around Oregon worked hard this last year passing millions of dollars worth of bonds, $229 million in our district alone. Impact fees can reduce the amount of bond money asked for by schools by up to 25%. We even researched the feasibility of a ballot measure in 2006, both with and without the partnership of the Oregon Home Builders Association, but found it would have jeopardized the many bond measures so desperately needed in high-growth areas. We rejected the concept of a shared park school impact fee. Stanford Children members have testified at legislative hearings last session on bills that didn't make it out of committee. We're so excited to be here today discussing this very reasonable and possible bill this session. People across the state care about this issue, and the message that we heard over and over was that growth needs to help pay for its impact on schools. Let's make a positive change for Oregon schools. It's what voters want and what our kids need. Thank you.
Sure, Decker.
Just one, as compelling as Julie's testimony is, at legislative hearings, we don't allow applause or if you hear something you don't like, we equally don't like. We try to adjudicate these as fairly as we can, so please hold your applause. Even if we tell a really funny joke, try to contain the
Vermont's Cheers rule. Chair Decker and members of the committee thank you also for the opportunity to present on behalf of Stand for Children in favor of Senate Bill 366, capped impact fees for schools. My name is Tom Olson. I live in Canby. I'm a retired grandparent of 10 and a great-grandparent of 14. The 15th soon to arrive at St. Charles Hospital in Bend. You can see why I'm a proud volunteer of Stand for Children. Prior to my recent retirement, I served as a strategic planning advisor for 15 different states' reform efforts in hundreds of school districts in the United States and the outlying Pacific territories. I helped many districts deal with and overcome crowded conditions due to rapid growth. Impact fees for districts such as Vancouver, Washington, one of my major clients over the years, have been a very important piece of the total puzzle of coping successfully with growth. I want to clarify exactly what this bill does and explain why we think it's the best alternative available among the bills with similar concepts. First of all, Senate Bill 366 is a very moderate, reasonable piece of addressing our school facilities needs. And it's very simple. It's a local option approach. Senate Bill 366 allows local school boards to pass a reasonable fee on new homes, but it's a fair option whether they feel the need to do so. The county collects this fee and puts the money into the school district's capital account. School districts determine the level of the fee up to a cap by creating a growth impact statement that clearly documents the relationship between the new residential development and the cost of needed improvements and growth of the local schools. Developers of affordable housing are exempted from assessment of the impact fees. Passing Senate Bill 366 will move Oregon in line with 11 other states, including California and Washington, that have school impact fees and use them sensibly. Furthermore, this bill will end Oregon's current situation of having only one mechanism, local bonds supported by the local taxpayers, to pay for their school facilities. No individual bill will provide a silver bullet solution to all of our school facilities problems. Impact fees are no exception. However, they are one piece of a functional system, and they provide a predictable, reasonable source of revenue that enables local school districts to better plan for and address their local facilities needs. And impact fees are a legitimate way for developers to finally pay a fair share of additional costs that their developments bring to their local community. For example, over the past 15 years, Vancouver, Washington School District successfully passed $500 million in construction remodeling bond levies. Their citizens voted for $500 million to build that district's World War II-era facilities to rebuild them. That was due to great leadership, certainly. But it was also significantly enhanced by the existence of impact fees, removing some of the burden from the local taxpayers. I observed firsthand in my work with that district a strong sense of partnership among developers, the school district, and the broader community. Senate Bill 366 also is not a giveaway to local school district. It requires accountability. First, the local district must document the need they face, prepare a plan, and conduct a public hearing to get citizen input on the plan and the proposed fee. And the bill requires the district to report annually to the public and Secretary of State on how they spend the impact fee money. Finally, it requires using impact fee dollars for capital improvements only, not for operations. Next, a capped school impact fee is certainly the most sensible alternative on the table. The capped school impact fee in Senate Bill 366 is the best mechanism to allow local school districts to offset the cost of growth. Consider the alternative. House Bill 2525, uncapped system development charges, SDCs, for schools. Stand for Children has four concerns with this bill. SDCs will only benefit high-growth districts, leaving districts with significant population shifts that affect school capacity unaided. Number two, under an uncapped SDC, districts could make a case for a $15,000 fee per home, which would begin to impact affordability of home prices. Third, the Oregon Home Builders
Association has indicated a willingness to put any uncapped fee on the ballot and run a vigorous campaign to defeat it. We've been counting, and this approach does not have the necessary votes to pass on the Senate floor. Senate Bill 45, Cap Parks Schools Systems Development Charge. There's also a House bill that creates a cap school, park schools impact fee. Well, parks and schools are both an essential part of the quality of life in the community. Any park-school combination faces unresolved implementation challenges because parks districts and school districts do not neatly overlap. The Salem-Keizer district, for example, overlaps four different distinct parks districts with different existing SDCs. Many communities that currently see parks and schools working together already to plan joint facilities may see a disintegration of that relationship when forced to compete for the same pool of money. It's just bad public policy. Beyond these practical challenges, any effort to combine parks with schools and cap parks will face fierce opposition from parks advocates, as I'm sure you will hear today, and localities that currently utilize their parks SDC to build healthy communities. This bill also lacks the votes to pass on the Senate floor. It's long overdue to establish Oregon policy that clearly recognizes our public school facilities as a critical part of the communities and state's infrastructure. Senate Bill 366 makes a very important step in that direction by providing a reasonable and accountable model to help support the cost of growth. The bill is a conservative approach to finally asking developers to bear a small and fair share of the school facilities cost of growth. It is good and needed public policy. We encourage your strong support and leadership in passing the bill. We are recommending two adjustments to the current draft. They're both in Section 2. Subsection 5 calls for an impact fee of $6,500. We're recommending $4,000 per lot in the
lease.
366. And Section 2, Subsection 5 calls for a impact fee of $6,500, impact fee cap. We're recommending a cap of $4,000. We feel that that's more reasonable. And then Subsection 9, also in Section 2, calls for the county recording officer to assess and collect the impact fee before recording a subdivision or partition plat. We're suggesting that that be changed to assess and collect the impact fee at the time the land is permitted.
Mr. Chair, on behalf of Stanford Children, I have a written copy of the amendments that they're suggesting, and I'd like to ask that we have staff draft those amendments.
Thank you. So I would assume I think the members are supposed to.
Yes. Yes.
And it's in our room. Thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you. I know you've been working hard on this for a number of years. First hearing of the session is now taking place. Dr. Nasa, I hear you are in the building. There you are. You, and then we'll hear from the Beaverton School District, who is our host today. And if Priscilla, if you're here, she is especially grateful for Priscilla Turner. Back to me.
Chair Decker, members of the committee, while I appreciate the conferring of the terminal degree, I can't take ownership of being a doctor. But I am the superintendent of the North Clackama School District, and I'll start with that. My name is Ron Mesa. I'm superintendent of the North Clackama School District, the district of 17,000 students. The school district is located immediately south and southeast of the city of Portland and includes a substantial amount of land which has recently been brought into the urban growth area. Much of that land is included in what is called the Damascus Plan. I'm here this morning to testify in strong support of Senate Bill 366, in opposition to Senate Bill 45, and in support of Senate Bill 44. My understanding, you're hearing all four of those bills. As you know, Senate Bill 366 would authorize local school boards to levy impact fees for new lots and parcels. Our district strongly supports establishment of such authority in accordance with the guidelines that are established in the bill. Our district has undergone substantial growth over the last decade, increasing enrollment by approximately 3,500 students. Like many other growth districts, this increased enrollment has taken place in one area of our school district, while the rest of the district has remained relatively stable. Thus, we have been faced with significant demands for new schools to house our increasing enrollment in those growth areas. The taxpayers of our school district have borne the burden and the opportunity of this growth by supporting two bond issues in the last 8 years. The first for $98 million in 1998 at a cost of $1.20 per thousand, and the more recent in 2006 for $230 million. Once again, for $1.20 per thousand. We have built one new high school, one new elementary school, and are in the process of building two additional elementary schools and two additional middle schools. And we are projected to have an additional 6,000 housing units in the next decade, which will require a minimum of two more elementary schools and a new high school. The North Clackamas School Board strongly supports the authority to impact levy fees in our district, to levy impact fees in our district, because of the demand that new housing will place on our district for additional schools. Costs of planning, land purchase, and modular classrooms are all costs which are driven by this new growth. And, unfortunately, for us, there are costs which have come largely from our general fund, which is supposed to be used for operating our schools. The establishment of impact fees and the funds which they will generate will provide a more proactive rationality to what is currently a reactive and at times haphazard process. We hold no illusions that impact fees will eliminate the burden that our taxpayers will assume in providing schools for our children. But the availability of impact funds will allow the district to proceed with options that I believe ultimately can reduce the burden on our taxpayer. One small editing note on Senate Bill 366. We would respectfully request that on line 10 of that bill, the language would be amended to say under capital improvement, that capital improvement includes but is not limited to costs related to acquisition of land, etc. It's a minor point, but I think it's consistent with some of the other language in the bill.
So what opportunities does that give you then, personally?
Well, it just, and maybe an attorney would tell me that does it make any difference, but if someone read it very, very literally, it limits use of the money strictly to the acquisition of land, but doesn't speak to some of the other costs that are involved in acquiring land. The studies that have to go into that, and I just wanted, at least I think it makes sense from an operating standpoint to understand the spirit of the law, but at least in terms of the actual language of the law that we allow those related costs to be used, or the impact fees to be used for those related costs. Is that, am I being clear enough on that? For instance, construction, there are a lot of costs that come before we actually build a building. That really, if it's in those areas, that we end up saving money for our taxpayers. Most recently, in this bond, we made a decision prior to the passage of the bond to have our architect proceed with the design drawing for the building at not a small cost, I might add. The advantage that has had for us is cut down the actual completion of the building by a year. Had we had to wait until the bond issue was passed, we would have lost substantial amounts of money in construction costs. And my sense is that we ought to be able to use impact fees for that kind of pre-planning, which ultimately can save our constituents' dollars. That's the reason I'd like the language. Just as we strongly support Senate Bill 366, we oppose Senate Bill 45. While we do not know the full history of these bills, we believe that Senate Bill 366 is a far superior bill. While our school district works very cooperatively with Parks and with our Parks and Recreation District in sharing land and facilities, the fact remains that the two districts have distinct and separate missions, and they cannot always be accommodated in tandem. As I read current Senate Bill 45, that relationship has to exist in order for those systems development charges to be put into place. Translated, we can't always build a school next to a park simply because the land isn't available or the placement of those things is not always in the right place. My reading of Senate Bill 45, which was mentioned by an earlier speaker, could potentially put our districts, that is the Parks and Recreation District and the school district, into adversarial positions, and that simply works backwards, I think, in the interest of the public. The second reason we oppose Senate Bill 45 is a political one. It seems to me that it represents an unnecessary diversion, which could have the effect of derailing any legislation to resolve a real problem by dividing the legislature. I will stop short of calling this a legislative strategy by some. However, it is my understanding that the Home Builders Association has given some mild support to SB 45. In this regard, I would simply make this note. It's been our experience in the North Clackamas School District that short of reaping the profits from building new homes, support of any kind from HBA on the matter of new school availability has been sort of lacking, if not absent. We would like to put our support and effort behind SB 366. Finally, we support Senate Bill 44 as an initial step in providing capital funds for new building and renovation. Our neighboring district, the Gladstone School District, also passed a bond issue in November. While our bond issue was premised on a combination of new facilities for growth and needed renovation of existing facilities, theirs was exclusively for needed renovation of existing facilities. They are not a growth district. Our bond issue was for $230 million. Theirs was for slightly less than $50 million. Our taxpayers were asked to pay $1.20 per thousand in assessed value. Their taxpayers were asked to pay $2.20 per thousand in assessed value. At some point, our state needs to recognize that equity lies not just in for pupil funding, but also in the quality of school facilities our children attend, and in the tax burden our community is asked to bear in providing those facilities. It seems to me that SB 44 is a first step in addressing this all-too-important equity issue. I certainly thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I'm sorry that I was a tad late. I'm led to believe that I should come on a little bit later, but I certainly appreciate this opportunity.
Questions for us? Thank you for making the trip across town. I appreciate your time. Senator Burdick, welcome. Your fellow senators all, well, Senator Starr didn't lay down, but your fellow senators have laid down the gauntlet of their school versus the Cleveland school. So I appreciate that. So, came up here a competitive issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do think this is appropriate for the government's experience because it was a case out of duty to the lady of the
So our host district, and thank you so much for the Beaverton School District for hosting us this this morning. And we see a number of students in the back from Beaverton tonight. We had chairs, but welcome. Thanks for coming. This is the State Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue, and if there are chairs available, I'm sure you would have found them by now, so I won't even offer them up. Mr. Quinlan, Ms. Cunningham, are you going to testify? And the chair of the school board and Priscilla Turner, please come up and testify. I have to publicly thank Priscilla. I took both sets of keys with me, and Priscilla lives in my neighborhood. Not only is she the chair of the school board, but drove my keys back to my wife. So I tonight. thank Priscilla 19 times for not leaving my wife stranded at home. Thank you, Priscilla, for doing that.
You can thank me by
and all, thank you for hosting us today. Good morning.
Chairman Deckard and members of the committee, welcome to Beaverton High School. As Ryan mentioned, I'm a little bit late because I had an errand, so I didn't hear if you did mention that this is your alma mater. Yes, okay, good, we got that. Beaverton High School began to educate Washington County students in 1902. Beaverton High is a school with a strong history and a tradition of excellence with active community support. The building we are presently in morphs itself into something brand new each decade, with remodeling, additions, and all this to create a 21st century high school out of a rather elderly building, but it's a wonderful place. It also is the perfect spot for me to see the situation that the Beaverton School District finds itself in today, although the blinds are closed, so I'm sure as you drove in and struggled to find a parking spot, you noticed the new cafeteria, which was from the 2000 bond and is a marvelous green building. And you also probably noticed the cluster of portables out on the field, which are needed in order to accommodate the over 2,000 students who attend here. Our community supported us in 2000 and again in 2006 by approving large bond measures to build new schools and add classrooms across the district. However, with bond measures alone to provide dollars for growth, the school district is always playing catch-up. We just begin to build schools after the new homes are already standing in huge lines in their new neighborhoods, and the students are pouring off the buses. We need another way to keep pace with the growth our district is experiencing. This past fall, as we worked to pass our $195 million bond measure, we heard from our constituents. Our school board represents approximately 120,000 constituents in our school district area, so it is a large group of Oregonians. They were ready to step up to pay for more classrooms. However, the comment we heard most often was, don't developers who are creating these new neighborhoods contribute to the schools? We had to say no. Yes, the builders help with roads and sewers, but not with schools. Our voters were surprised that sewers, as necessary as they are, would come before schools. Voters know that fees will not take the place of bond measures, but they viewed this as a basic issue of fairness and priorities. We Oregonians like to think of ourselves as planners for the future, and yet in school facilities funding, we are woefully backward. With your help, we can change this session. I trust that you will be able to give school districts across the state the tools they need to deal more effectively with student growth. As mentioned, there's Senate Bill 45, and as mentioned by Superintendent Musso, it does link school system development charges to parks and recreation and requires that school facilities be adjacent to parks facilities. We also have had a long-standing relationship with Tualatin Hills Park and Rec District, and we share many facilities. However, with the density that we have in our area, we struggle to cobble together lots to find sizes big enough to lodge an elementary school on, let alone have park facilities. So we find that part of Senate Bill 45 is makes it extremely difficult and probably impossible to keep carry out in our area. We're shaking our heads about even finding a spot for a new comprehensive high school for 2,000 kids in our area. The land is just not available. We do not want to compete with our recreation districts for dollars. So my opinion on Senate Bill 45 is that schools, if it's going to be Senate Bill 45, schools should be an additional, they should be separate from the Parks and Rec and listed as F schools on their own line. And the requirement for adjacent facilities should be removed. Regarding Senate Bill 366, I believe this bill would help districts across the state. There are differences in how growth occurs. We have growth occurring across our district, 700 to 1,000 new students per year for the past 10 years, and looking forward to the same type of growth through 2020. So that's a constant. Other, in smaller areas, they may have a new residential development happen, and so the impact fees on Bill 366 would probably work better for them. With the school board assessing these fees, there is local control, something we lack in Oregon, and something any bit of it that I can regain, I will try to regain, because I think that develops the relationship between the community and the school district in a better fashion. There's local control and more accountability. I personally find this a cleaner mechanism for providing dollars for school construction, although we do have some questions regarding the definition and application of the phrase new lots or parcels. This would like that would need to be clarified. I trust that impact fees or systems development charges will proceed through this legislature and the necessary amendments will be made. In these two bills, we have the makings for a better way of school construction in Oregon. Please do not let it be derailed by narrow interests. As you consider these bills, please think of all the students pouring off the buses and needing a place to learn. Thank you for your time and your consideration of these points, and once again, welcome to Beaverton School District and Beaverton High. And I'll turn it over now to Tom Kloon, our newest board member.
I'm going to pause for a moment. The fire marshal is here, and we have an incredible crowd, which is wonderful, but I'm going to turn it over just for a moment to him, and he needs us to do something to accommodate our large crowd we have this morning.
North of it, one of the rapidly growing parts of the district. Wednesday, September 6th, last year, about 8 o'clock, my wife Katie walked my son Joseph to the corner park bus stop. Joseph, who's then 5, he's very much the quiet soul in a noisy, quarreling household. And this was his first day of kindergarten. It was also Finley's first day of Kinder Village. We'll talk more about that in a second. Joseph completed the first leg of his bus ride, arriving at Finley Elementary around 8:30. And I was there waiting for him. I had gone there because Joseph and every other kindergartner riding the bus had to transfer to a second bus to arrive at Kinder Village by 8:45. After 2.5 hours of kindergarten, Joseph then would get back on another bus for a 20-minute ride, bringing his daily bus time to just shy of an hour. So what is Kinder Village? Picture half a dozen or so flesh-colored portables, those beautiful portables at the bottom of a slope, sort of at the edge of a playground lot at another elementary school's playground. It's sited at Jacob Wisner Elementary School. There's a good fence around the portables and a little play structure sitting in the middle of a wood chip filled play area that's created by the U, the formation of the portables. That's Kinder Village. It's a wonderful thing. I'm not critical of Kinder Village. The people, the teachers, the professionals who teach there are amazing teachers, and they do great things with the resources they have. I'm confident that our son is getting a great start to his education there. But how much better would it be to locate a kindergarten facility right at the school where the students belong? How much more effective could those teachers be to be with their principal in the same school building? Joseph spends, an hour a day transferring bus lines like he's a New York City subway driver. So Finley Elementary is in a jam. The school's bulging with 873 students in a building that was permanently designed for 700 students, and enrollment will top 900 next year. Enrollment there has increased 50% over the last 4 years. The impact of that affects every facet of the school. Kids rotate through PE, music, technology classes. There are 6 shifts of lunch, beginning at 10:50 a.m. The last one finishes at 1:15 p.m., so the cafeteria actually operates for half of the school. Now, 8 portable classrooms total augment families, but then the kids have less room to run around. The new challenges arise. Student safety, bathrooms, bullying all become new issues as a result of overcrowding. Now, I've talked a little bit about Finley, but Finley's in pretty good shape compared to many of our schools. You don't have to look further than the high schools. Sunset High School, designed for 1,600 students, holds over 2,000. Westview, designed for 1,930, holds 2,500. Southridge, designed for 1,780, holds 2,014. Aloha, designed for 1,690, holds 1,954. And only Beaverton, where we sit now, has added enough portable classrooms to have sufficient seats for its students. And even this school holds 100 students more than its design capacity. The day after the school district passed the bond measure, which our chair, Priscilla Turner, referred to, a parent called me and jokingly said, "Hey, so when my kids get to school today, there'll be no crowds at all, right?" I wish this were true. Bond measure therapy won't fix our crowding issues. Oregon urgently needs to mitigate this crowding problem in our fastest growing districts. Please help us find long-term relief. I truly hope the legislature funds some of the many things that you're considering for all-day kindergarten and Head Start, increased PE classes, restored music and arts classes, class size reductions.
I'm going to have to do a time check.
Just to wrap up.
Sure.
So while growth has brought diversity to our area, it's brought this significant challenges as well. I hope that the legislature will pass a bill like 366. I'd like to say that I do not, as a parent, can't support caps. And I'm concerned by anything that would cap the district's ability, the local government's ability to work with the community to assess the fees correctly at the level that the community decides.
Thank you. Questions for our Beaverton School Board? Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting us. I'd like to give John Charles, John, if you're here, and Jim Rowe, and Stephanie Mendoza Gray an opportunity. John is always brave to come and stand up supporters and provide testimony. And if Mr. Rowe or Ms. Gray is also here, great to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, President of the Cascade Policy Institute, a research center interested in individual liberty and economic opportunity, and also personal responsibility, a subject relevant to this hearing. I have a couple brief points. Historically, the approach to public funding public education has been that there is a broad public benefit to having these schools, so therefore we will have a broad-based tax program to support them. And while I have trouble with that in some regards, I at least understand that connection. But now we're moving to a program in these two bills where there's a general broad benefit, but a much narrower tax base. We're targeting a very specific group of people, and I question that. And I know that it's always tempting in a room full of people who are benefiting from this. It's very tempting to put this tax burden on people who are not even here to defend themselves. Future people who would split parcels, create lots, build new homes. Of course, they're not here to speak against it. So it is easy to tax them, but it's not fair. New homes, the principle behind system development charges, even though it's been muddied in Oregon the way it's been implemented, the general principle is if you do something, you demand a sewer hookup or an electricity hookup or a telephone hookup that will clearly benefit you, then you should pay something. I understand that. But from my standpoint, the tighter the connection, the better that makes sense. A new home does not demand a government-run school. A new lot does not demand a school. In fact, not even parents demand those schools because they may choose to homeschool or send their kids elsewhere. Certain parents who choose to use certain schools are the ones who benefit. But if they don't pay, if only these new homes pay, then you've broken the link between those who benefit and those who pay, and that's really a perversion of what SBC is supposed to be. Now, there's always a problem with unintended consequences in these types of intervention. I'd like to suggest a couple. One is that because of the exemption in 366, Section 2, Sub 4, for what's called affordable housing, which is kind of a buzz phrase, really, for low-income housing complexes, we're going to get more of those. Second, you're going to put a lot of price pressure on existing homes going up because if you have five kids and you're expecting to go to public school, what you want to do is buy an old home, escape the SBC, and then you set the tax on new homes, so you get less of new homes. Price pressure on existing homes makes the entire housing affordability issue more complex. So I'd like to just say, as a general matter, if you're going to shift from broad-based approach to specific, and you really want a tight connection, then let's be adults here and say, well, how about an SBC per student? I mean, I am a parent and a grandparent, and I have modest means, but I'm willing to accept responsibility that when I have kids, they do cost something. If you really want a tight connection, then you would have an SBC per student enrollment. You're still going to get a 90% or so subsidy from the general fund. That's quite fair. It's more fair to taxing people who aren't even here. Thank you.
That's not a stop point.
It's pretty effective.
Keep it coming, district. Any questions for Mr. Charles? Just from a philosophical perspective, this is just suggesting a lifting of the preemption right now to stay out of preempts this conversation at the local level. Do you think that's our Cascade Policy Institute feel that the state has a role in preempting the local decision makers from discussing this topic?
Mr. Chairman, well, we would never preempt any discussion, but if you pass the bills and you actually allow this to happen, I think you're going to have severe gaming, especially among developers, looking for places where this new tax doesn't exist. And the hottest trend, by the way, nationwide among developers and their codependent with local governments is age-restricted, deed-restricted developments where local governments fast-track development and send people to build big projects to 55 and up. So they get property taxes, and they get thousands of homes, hundreds of homes, but no kids. And developers, of course, love having these fast-tracks, so you actually, you know, create a problem of homes for actual families, and they're not being built by developers because of that incentive. Well, if you have some communities who impose this and some don't, you're going to have developers gaining, and communities that need new homes, new moderately priced homes, they're not going to get them.
Good questions. Thank you. Ms. Gray?
It's good morning. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Stephanie Mendoza Gray. I'm the chair of the Portland Parks Board and I'm speaking to them on your behalf. I'm testifying today in favor of Senate Bill 366 and in strong opposition to Senate Bill 45. I want to place my comments within a broader context relating to the work of the Portland Parks Board. The citizen-based advisory parks board is appointed by Portland City Council and is advisory in nature to the commissioner in charge of parks, which is Commissioner Dan Salisbury, and to our bureau directors, RSCB. We are all committed park advocates, sometimes we refer to as parkies, but that's okay. And we see firsthand the benefits that accrue to all the citizens by a very well-managed park system. We all come on the Parks Board from very diverse professional backgrounds, and we all have diverse personal experiences. But to a person, we can speak to the positive benefits and impacts that we have all had through parks, public spaces, natural areas, and recreation areas that we have all used. And I have, on a personal note, two children who have grown up in the Portland Park System, and I can certainly attest to the benefits that they're accruing as well from having this park system. We believe that park and natural areas contribute greatly to our quality of life, to the economy, and provide a contemplative refuge that is in contrast but also complementary to the built environment. The park system is also one of the few great equalizers in our society. People can gather there regardless of their socioeconomic status, their personal beliefs, their religious beliefs, their political participation. So we also see this benefit to a park system that also goes beyond just the use of it for natural and recreational purposes. We believe strongly in terms of assuring that there is equity and access for everyone to our park system. And we want to make sure that our park system expands in a way that meets the ever-increasing population needs, and there is a balance there in trying to deliver a park system for all citizens and in contrast to the growing population and the development that's occurring in our state. So we are very vigilant about making sure that there is a balance with respect to those two issues. The Parks Board knows that a well-functioning park system depends on successful partnerships, including working with other governmental entities, community leaders, the business community, nonprofits, and school districts. And this is why I'm here today on behalf of the Parks Board to support Senate Bill 366, because we know that the impact will be used to provide additional education from them that is so compelling. I've heard so many things today, and I know as a parent that we desperately need the ability to have these schools to be able to provide for future educational needs for our children. From our work at school districts, we know that new growth has a big impact on public services and that our schools have been left behind in receiving adequate funding to meet the growing demand for educational services. New development means more demand for all public services, including educational services. We believe that this bill will go a long way towards mitigating the current situation that we're facing. I also want to take this opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 45, which requires that schools in part share a single capped SDC. As the population increases, we need to ensure that we have land set aside for developing new respite and recreational opportunities to serve this new demand. I talked before about the balance, and I think combining school districts and park districts in one bill doesn't function and also does not recognize the distinguishable nature of both of those respective districts. Park systems are struggling to acquire land while it is still available and doing so with very limited resources. The existing Portland Park SDC that Zahra Santenberger referred to in her testimony is a critical tool for both land acquisition and park development to meet this demand. And so as you look at Senate Bill 45, our opposition is really based on the fact that we don't think it is easily implemented because we're talking about two apples and oranges and trying to put it into one bill. And we also will create an adversarial relationship because what this bill, in our opinion, is doing is putting schools against parks. And there should not be a dividing line between those two. And that's what this bill will do. We share many common goals in servicing families and neighborhoods that make cities livable. Parks are an important and vital infrastructure, and on the Parks Board, we consider them as critical as clean air and clean water. This bill is forcing citizens to choose between schools and their parks in their communities, and we really believe strongly that if this bill passes, it's going to compromise the balance, as I talked about earlier. We urge the committee to adopt legislation that provides adequate funding to meet the educational needs of our children and reject legislation that creates unnecessary competition and doesn't provide adequately for the future needs of school districts and park systems in our state. Thank you.
Mr. Rowe. If possible, I just want to make sure that everyone has these comments and chance to testify. So if it's possible, if there's new points to be made, certainly the parks come up with your piece of help. And others in the moment, if it's possible, just to make new points, that helps a lot.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. I will refrain from repeating some of the points that have been made previously that we strongly agree with, but I'm here to represent the City of Woodburn's strong opposition to Senate Bill 45. Our mayor sends her regrets. She planned on attending today and was unable to, so I'm here to represent her and the City Council's position. On February 12th of this year, Woodburn... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Jim Rowe, Community Services Director for the City of Woodburn. On February 12th of this year, the Woodburn City Council passed or adopted a resolution in strong opposition to Senate Bill 45, and I think you've been provided with a copy of that. In addition, our mayor, Kathy Figley, drafted a letter, which I have brought with me today and would like to present to you if possible, articulating the position that the mayor and the city council have in opposition to this potential bill. While the City of Woodburn strongly supports the need for school impact fees, they're in opposition to Senate Bill 45 because it combines those fees with park fees and places an arbitrary cap on it. I've just become familiar with Senate Bill 366 today. It sounds like probably a much better solution to the problem. The mayor and the council want to express their desire for some sort of legislation that will address the need for school SDCs or impact fees. Senate Bill 366 may very well do a much better job of that, but they feel very strongly that Senate Bill 45 is the wrong direction to take. So I'll limit my comments to that since many of the other points have already been made.
If you have questions for this, thank you very much. Appreciate your time coming down here. Dean Solman, Chris Walton, and Mike Halk. And I'll try to keep not to say this, but the brevity is critical in getting everyone on these lists. So if you want to lead off, you're more than welcome.
My name is Mike Houck. I'm here today on behalf of the Urban Green Spaces Institute to urge your support of Senate Bill 366. I was also asked by my colleagues at the Audubon Society of Portland to convey their support for 366 as well, and I provided you with written testimony from the Audubon Society of Portland, which, by the way, has 10,000 members in the Portland metropolitan region and was founded in 1902, so we're pleased to be here to support our sister institution. And as eloquent as my written testimony is, and as much as I would like to repeat it to you, I will refrain from doing that and take your advice and simply say we support 366. We adamantly oppose Senate Bill 45 for all the reasons that have been articulated this morning. Thank you very much.
So perhaps maybe we can explore that issue just with you, Mike. So I think the rationale for Senate Bill 45 is the art of the possible. And in the park community, if there was some sort of combination, I know you're opposed, that I guess the only question I would put out there is that is all that is possible, given enough votes down in Salem, to get something done on both the park and the school front. Maybe you adjust the cap and negotiate. Is that something that at any point is worthy of discussion?
Absolutely not. And in fact, we're supporting 366 with some reluctance in that we do not believe in a cap at all, frankly. So we view 366 as the art of the possible. That's our opinion, and I hope that that's the direction we go and not in the direction of 45.
Chair Decker and the members of the committee, I thank you for this opportunity to be a voice for school children statewide. I pardon my voice because I am fighting cold. My name is Janine Solomon, and I am a proud parent of two boys in the Hillsboro School District and a member of Stand for Children. As an active parent volunteer, I see the effects of our overcrowded schools in so many ways every day. At Pointer Middle School, my son's Algebra 1 class has 37 kids in a heated, by body I mean, classroom not built for that capacity. At lunch, there is standing room only in their cafeteria at either lunch period and not enough table space for everyone to sit and eat. Now, I can't imagine what kind of meal that our own family would have if we share that same circumstance at our own dinner table every night. We need Senate Bill 366. At Tobias, our kindergarten families need a gold star for being able to work with a very inconsistent 2.5-day schedule for their kinder kids in the Hillsboro School District. On February 19th, my boys and I made the trip to Salem and met with legislators, such as yourself, Senator Starr, and rallied with thousands to ask for additional targeted funding for schools so we can lower class size and implement a full-day kindergarten. Two strategies proven to increase academic achievement. What an experience that was for all of us. Back at home, we were later discouraged to hear from our superintendent that we would have a hard time both lowering classroom sizes and implementing a full day, every day kindergarten. Not because of a lack of teachers to hire, but a lack of classrooms to put everyone in it. Have I mentioned how much we need Senate Bill 366? A cap school impact fee would allow Hillsboro to implement these strategies by giving us a steady source of revenue to add portables or to expand schools. It is unfortunate that school impact fees were not in place in previous years. Our area in Orenco seems to continue to grow, and as the saying goes, if you build it, they will come. Houses will continue to be built, and future students will fill those homes. We need not dwell on the past, for our future is looking ever so brighter. The economy is improving, and government is promising to have education be a forethought and not an afterthought. It is so important to the children in our education system, the children who represent our economic future in Oregon, those fellow doctors, congressmen, congresswomen, that we find means of dependable income in our schools. Senate Bill 366, a capped school impact fee, is a sensible alternative to such an important issue, funding. Again, I thank you for this opportunity to share my thoughts, and I urge your support of Senate Bill 366, for my boys, as well as the children from all across Oregon. Thank you.
Hello, Sam.
Hi, Chair Decker, members of the committee. Thanks for taking time to visit us here in the evening. Try to keep my comments short. My name is Chris Walton. I'm a Beaverton resident and a Sandy Children member. I'm also a member of the building committee, and I'm a supporter of Senate Bill 366. I work for Hampton Distribution Companies, Hampton Affiliates, the second largest private employer in the state of Oregon. We are one of the largest sawmills in the area, and I'm a big supporter of Senate Bill 366. Now, I bet you're sitting there asking yourself, why would somebody who supplies the home building community support impact loans, especially if they have together my property and sales of lumber? Let me tell you why. It's real simple. School impact fees are a necessary tool to relieving overcrowded schools. The majority of our schools in the state are at or over capacity and need major repairs. Making room for kids is the first step in relieving our overcrowded schools. Home builders in the community will argue that school impact fees will drive up the price of homes, reducing their sales and profits, especially in the soft loan housing market. There's no doubt about that that's coming. But look at the facts. When you look at D.L. Horton, the single largest home builder in the United States, they are involved in our community. They build on the east side of Multnomah County. The average home price under D.L. Horton was $283,000 in 2006. That's from the annual report. If you'd like to see a copy of it, too. Let's assume that we're able to assess the recommended amendment and assess an impact fee to a D.R. Horton home of $4,000. That's what Stanley Petroleum is recommending to amend the bill. That would only increase the sales price of the home 1.5%. 1.5%. So a small amount to pay to move into a community with a new and improved school. And the fee will most likely be paid by the developer, who is already charging the maximum home price the market will bear. Home builders in the community will argue that assessing school impact fees on homes is unfair, because it's only a tax on new homes in the community. We've already heard that argument today. However, it is actually more fair, because it allows communities to charge developers to fund the growth in the infrastructure in the community caused by the new development. They're causing the new development. They need to pay for it. This means the cost of new schools is shared by home builders and current residents. Having good schools is good for home builders. Good schools attract people to our community and provide more opportunity for home builders. The people like the community, they want to build more homes here. They want to remodel here. They want to stay here. The last election and recent public rallies for schools demonstrate that the public expects the legislature to start solving the overcrowding in our schools. The time is of the essence, and we are expecting the legislature to pass Senate Bill 366. Stand for Children members work diligently to get legislators elected who are committed to improving public schools. Now is the time to meet that commitment. Please join the public, the business community, and me in supporting our schools and get Senate Bill 366 passed this session. Thank you.
Wouldn't be here if we weren't serious about 366 holding our public hearing. Don Napolitano, Wendy Kroger, and Jennifer Reichlich. And then we, for folks who have traveled, if you can wave your hand over 100 miles, you'll be on deck and we'll try to move through so that we accommodate everyone that wishes to testify. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is John Napolitano from Hillsborough. I'm a parent of a third grader in the Hillsborough School District and a homeowner in Hillsborough. I just want to provide you a few numbers from the Hillsborough School District. We passed a bond measure in 2006. Just this November. We also previously had passed a bond measure in 2002 and 2000. And these paid for two high schools, some elementary schools, and dozens of portables. The total of these bond measures will, of course, be on the 2007 property tax bills. In Hillsborough, Senator Starr will find out this November approximately one quarter of all the taxes, primary taxes in Hillsborough, will be for new construction. So when you hear about taxpayers not being here being impacted by these measures, think about fixed income seniors, homeowners, who are paying one quarter of their public debt, and for them it's a huge amount. Many of them are very supportive of those schools. Many of them have grandkids in schools. They want to support their community, and they can't pay their board. So think about it. There are taxpayers that are not here that are kind of impacted by this in a positive way. And in 2007, this year, we're going to be building elementary schools in Hillsborough. The cost of one elementary school, the cost of land, is approximately $24 million for 600 students. That's about $40,000 for one student. Think about that number. That school will last for 40 years, hopefully, maybe more. But it will cost 30,000 students for the school district to add a seat for one student in the district. For the 2006 bond measure, the school district did a study, projecting the impact of new housing over the next 10 years in the Hillsborough school district. And some of the data that I found interesting in that study is that for single homes, for detached single homes, for every two units, there's roughly an average one new student. So for every housing, new homes, single family homes, there's about 500 new students. For low income, rental is much higher. It's typically one per unit. For other rental or condominiums, it's significantly lower. But roughly, given the mix of housing in Hillsborough, typically it will be about one new student per every two housing units that will be built in the next few years. So basically, the impact of one new home is about $20,000 that the community has to pay for schools. And you've heard, why does that, if there's no student in that home, why does it have to pay? The reality is that over a 40-year lifespan of a house, that house will change hands many times. So if the chances are 50-50 that there's a student there, over the 40 years, if the house typically will sell every 6 to 7 years on average, there's a 98% chance that somebody during those 40 years there will be in that home, there will be a student in paid home. So there is a direct correlation between a home and the need for a school. So that's why, for all these reasons, from the Hillsborough School District, I urge your support for 366. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Chair Decker, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Kroger. I'm a resident of Washington County, the city of Beaverton, and also as well as the Pellis Park Recreation District. I'm also the chair of the Pellis Park Recreation District Trails Advisory Committee, and I'm a longstanding Idenet Park and Recreation Manager. I want to thank you for the opportunity of being able to testify before you this morning. I'm here to express my strong opposition to Senate Bill 45 and ask for your support for Senate Bill 366. No one questions the need for schools to be properly funded both at the state level and at the local level. However, to fund schools at the expense of other local service providers is not good public policy, as you have already heard several times. So I will skip that part of my presentation and go directly to something that's pretty specific. It's the partnership between schools and parks is strong and longstanding both here in Beaverton and I think statewide. In Beaverton, Park District's SDC funds were used to develop the 220-acre Trolleton Hills Nature Park. That park is heavily used by students from the Beaverton School District as an outdoor classroom. In addition, 9 current or recently completed parks projects and trails projects used SDC funds.
For example, SDC funds were used for the purchase of the Mount Williams property here in Beaverton, and once the trail is finished on that, it will be a safe off-street street access to the students attending Chehalem Elementary School. We still have major gaps in funding. If we had lots of SDCs left over, gosh, I'd say, sure, let's put them in schools, but I'm sorry, we don't. So I think that without a Park SDC that's unencumbered by ties with another service provider, I cannot assure you that these projects would actually have been built. Fortunately, they are built. I ask your help to ensure the opportunity is there for both parks and schools in the future by supporting SB 366 and opposing SB 45.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Folks who waved have driven a great deal to be here. If you could come up and briefly, please come up. Forest Grove does not qualify as put on this list as 100 miles.
Combining Cap Park and school SDCs as is proposed in Senate Bill 45. combining the CAP and the park and school SDCs will have a substantial negative impact on our ability to deliver quality park services in Bend. And I'm going to be touching on some of the points in my written testimony, but in an interesting time, I'm not going to read it to you. I want to call your attention, however, to the district's resolution number 287, which is attached to my written comments and is in opposition to Senate Bill 45 and to any proposal that would combine and cap school and park SDCs. In Bend, the Bend Metro Park and Recreation District has grown from 37,500 residents to over 77,000 in 12 years, July 1994 to July 2006. That's an annual sustained growth rate of 6% over that 12-year period. In the past 5 years, the district has expended over $31 million in capital improvement projects. Of that $31 million, $17 million, or approximately 55%, was funded with park SDCs. This includes the acquisition and development of 15 neighborhood parks, three community park improvement projects, four community river park acquisitions, a large new community park acquisition, the 170-acre Pine Nursery, Forest Service Pine Nursery property in Northeast Bend, was partially SDC funded. And it also includes several major trail projects, including a new pedestrian bicycle river crossing in the South Canyon area. It's a total number of major SDC-funded projects of approximately 25 in that five-year period. In Bend, last November, we passed a $119 million school bond measure that will fund new facilities and the rehabilitation of older schools needed for the next 5 years. However, that those two capital numbers are not nearly adequate to fund the total capital improvement budgets of either school district or of the Park and Recreation District. And in fact, the district's capital improvement plan at this time for the next 5 years includes $71 million in needed improvements, and approximately 50% of those under our methodology would be SDC eligible. So in the face of rapid growth in Bend, the district SDC fee has not been adequate to maintain the level of service that was inventoried when the methodology was created in 2002. In fact, if the fee were recalculated today, updating only the cost factors in the formula, and that's cost for real estate and construction, the fee would rise by 43.5% to approximately $5,000, well over the proposed cap that has been discussed. Both regarding Senate Bill 45 and also the companion bill that's being forwarded in the House. I want to take a moment just to briefly touch on what I believe to be the major difficulties with combining and capping school SDCs. By setting the SDC fee at less than the maximum allowed under ORS 2.3, the district's board has demonstrated sensitivity to the rising cost of housing in Bend. The consequence of this restraint, however, is that as our population has grown, our level of service is measured in park acres per thousand residents has declined during the past 5 years. Capping park SDCs at any arbitrary level will ensure that this decline in service will eventually be experienced in other high-growth communities statewide. Second, Senate Bill 45 proposes to combine parks and schools in the same manner that the existing statute combines water supply and distribution for wastewater collection and disposal. In the manner of parks and schools, this is clearly putting apples and oranges into the same basket. Park systems and school systems are significantly different. It is likely that any methodology developed for imposing a school SDC fee will be significantly different than the typical method for imposing a park fee. It makes no sense to assume that they are the same and to combine them as a statutory category. In Bend, it's our experience that park systems do contain some classes of facilities that can gain some synergy from being co-located with schools, but clearly not all park facilities in any class can be located with schools. For example, there may be some cost savings in located neighborhood park amenities adjacent to or on school grounds. But for a host of good reasons, not all neighborhood park facilities can be adjacent to or on school grounds. not the least of these reasons is that neighborhood park service areas are typically smaller, one-half to a quarter the size of elementary school attendance areas. In addition, there are many categories of parks that may, by their very nature and function, will not be co-located with schools. Examples are river parks, natural areas, urban plazas, regional parks, greenways, trail corridors. Four, I'd like to speak to the comment and follow on the comment that Mike Palk made. I believe that this proposal is the art of the impossible. Unlike school systems that are developed to meet statewide delivery standards, park systems rely on locally set service standards. This makes combining them for the purpose of calculating the fee problematic. If they're calculated separately then, and then combined, there will eventually be necessary compromises on both sides to make the resulting combined fees fit a cap. This will put park and school officials who are typically partners in the provision of essential community services at odds with one another. As I said earlier, the Bend Metro Park Recreation District does not oppose school SBCs or impact fees. We do oppose a combination of and having park and school SBCs as is proposed in Senate Bill 45. Quality schools are not the only thing that children need to be grow up to be healthy, well-rounded adults. They will need playgrounds, sport fields, and recreation centers as well. Robbing Peter to pay Paul in the form of a combination and capping of school and park SBCs is not the solution to our school funding problems in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you for traveling. And that is probably an appropriate place to be able to grow and have this conversation about
And we will be carrying on that conversation with our local school district.
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear what happens when you report this. And we'll probably be done as a committee. That's a good thing for those advocates of probably the other way to be interested in certainly the House would be interested in what y'all decide on that.
We'll let you know.
Questions for the family? Thank you. Thank you. Traveled a great distance, please. 100 miles or over is our usual. Yes, sir.
Hi. I was doing so well, and now my heart's beating really fast. So I'll do the best I can. Name's Steve Frank. I'm a newly elected member of the State and City Council, and I'm not speaking for them. And I'm also a substitute teacher and was a full-time teacher. I'm learning a lot being on the city council and learning a lot about, I think, what you deal with in your position and how hard it is to make decisions because you have so many different actors, so many different interests coming at you, and you have to follow the law. As a substitute teacher and when I was a full-time teacher, especially in what I see with the North San Diego School District and the Siles School District, right, my two favorite places to teach. It's more or less of a disaster right now. And as new students come in to the school districts, it creates more problems and more of a disaster. And to have school funding based solely, pretty much, on school funds and on the back of those people, it creates, I think, an unfair situation. Senate Bill 366, I am fully in support of. I think it's a wonderful bill. It's not the answer by any means. The system, I don't think there's anyone. I don't know if someone can tell me that they think things are going well in the school districts or with our school systems right now for the kids. But it's broken. It's clearly broken. The schools are broken. Senate Bill 366 is a part of the puzzle. It's part of fixing to get money into the school districts, to help the school districts. I think it's a wonderful bill. And it's funny, what I've learned from being on the city council here for the short time and votes that I've been a part of, you have to stand up. And I am begging you as the people who can pass or have a part of passing these laws to help the schools. If there's other ways, and there are other bills, and there's things I've been involved with, there are other ways and other methods. This is part of the puzzle, part of the fix. But you have to stand up. And it's hard when all the interests you hear and you're involved with all these other people and the other interests, it's hard to make that decision. But I'm begging you to make that decision. Help us in Oregon to fix the schools. They are broken.
Chair Decker, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm legislative analyst with the city of Eugene. You've got my written testimony. We are testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 45 this morning. In reviewing our legislative policies document, there's two things that are very clear. We're doing other cities and being fairly protective in our ability to self-govern. I don't like to have a counter imposed upon local government. Choices, funding mechanisms, as you've heard echoed by other people in this morning's testimony. The other piece of this bill is that we thank you not to create a structural situation whereby we could be arguing with our partners, a Columbia school district and a Bethel school district, over funding mechanisms and funds that could be established should this bill pass. We work in partnership with those school districts, and we can foresee a situation where this could just lead to strife, and we'd rather avoid that. So we urge you to take no further action on this bill. Thank you.
The next question is for...
Of all the cities in Oregon, is the credibility of the arguments that the county is using for the reporting or
hours of use for youth recreation programs.
all on synthetic turf. We do it all year long and keep everybody out of the mud. We hope. Well, you know, synthetic turf's an amazing thing, and it allows for year-round cooperation. We've had several times when school areas that are not synthetic are not used. And we're responsible for the maintenance for Beaverton School District's athletic areas. So it helps everybody, and it cuts everybody's costs. With every aspect respect, I ask you to please support 366 and oppose Senate Bill 45. Trying to tie the two entities together will change the dynamic from one of basic cooperation and shared interest to one of competition for a share in a single pot of money. As any of you may know who've ever argued with anybody over money, arguing competition doesn't generally lead to cooperation. So we support the idea of a citizen development charge in four schools, separate of the park district. This legislation that's before all of us, this 366 or 45, the whole legislative package, should be about having new development, at least a portion of the direct costs, and that the development brings to our area, not a muddled group of legislation that will pit two traditional allies against each other. So, again, we're very much in support of Senate Bill 366, opposing Senate Bill 45. The 12 Hills Park Recreation District Board of Directors unanimously passed a resolution in our January meeting supporting 366 and opposing 45. That will be forwarded to the department. Thank you.
Another point to add, Mr. Griffiths, sir.
I have a few points. I'm John Griffiths. I'm board chair for THPRD, Walton Hills Park and Recreation District. I live in Beaverton, Washington County. Like Larry said, I will say that we are against Senate Bill 45. We do not oppose Senate Bill 366. It seems to me that the core issue here is to what degree we develop. We pay for the incremental infrastructure that we have places on the community. That's been debated far and wide over the years, but it appears to be true that every new park, reaches its own way of demand on the infrastructure. Given that, THPRD and myself personally have no objection to the idea of schools having their own impact fee or SDC or whatever you want to call it. My way of thinking, I'm not sure why they never had one before. But in order to fund that, it appears to me that Senate Bill 45 actually pays for it by paying it out of the parks SDC, or at least part of the parks SDC. That is not a good way to keep up your park infrastructure. And the demand for park infrastructure is only going up as fast or faster than what the school infrastructure is going up. So I'll just close by saying that we do ask that you do your best to see that Senate Bill 45 does not see the light of day, and that Senate Bill 366 be focused on as the avenue for supporting schools. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure some parts here in
Chair Decker, members of the committee, I'm Daniel Eisenbeis. Thank you for announcing it correctly. Legislative Affairs Director from 1000 Friends of Oregon, here testifying today in support of Senate Bill 366 on behalf of several thousand members statewide. Oregon's communities currently have inadequate tools available to build and improve the schools we need to well-educate our children. 1000 Friends of Oregon strongly supports land use patterns and built environment in great neighborhoods and communities. The center of a great neighborhood, one usually finds a school. Schools are the gathering places for communities, the place for neighborhood association meetings, little league baseball games, and family picnics, in addition to school activities. Schools are every bit as much a part of the infrastructure of the neighborhood as our streets, sewers, and parks. That is why 1000 Friends of Oregon urges you to support Senate Bill 366. The school impact fee simply makes sense. It provides a local option, public process, and accountability. While we would prefer a bill that did not include a cap
on a school impact fee. We're supportive of this bill as a first step toward ensuring that all community infrastructure needs are met. We have not taken a formal position on Senate Bill 45, but I think there are a number of reasons to be concerned about that approach. Combining and having parks with schools assumes that those two functions are one and the same. And clearly, although there's a nexus, we need to consider schools separately from the parks.
One question for that, Larry, or for John. Hillsborough has combined to come to growth athletic facilities and school facilities. Are we looking at that in Peterson, of having some sort of where you would have two high schools share an athletic facility? Or has that been explored? I think other studies have been more about that.
Some of the high schools have used our facilities for a course of time for their home field or that kind of thing. But as far as the schools looked at something,
I would add that a couple of years ago, we put $200,000 in SDC funds into the Aloha High School athletic facility at Turkey in exchange for a set number of hours per year to use that help. Go a long way towards paying for that field. Since then, we've renegotiated the agreement and we spread our use out among the various Bloomington School District athletic turf fields. But we stand ready to do other deals with the school district as we go forward. It is a good combination of infrastructure that's involved. One other point I'd like to make is when the HPRB passed its own SDC fee, we capped ourselves voluntarily at 65% of what the law would allow us to do out of sympathy for the home costs in the area. I want to let you know that that has cost us. We are falling behind and have fallen behind every year in terms of our ability to keep up.
Thank you very much. Jessica Adams, Art Schlack, and Susan Coffey. Steve Frank, can you testify?
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adams, and here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We're here in support of both Senate Bill 366 and Senate Bill 45, the commercial builders in Oregon wanting to rebuild multifamily housing, roads and bridges, but we also built schools. And we are, as community members, very aware of the struggle for our clients, school districts, to keep up with the needs for growth, for repair, for maintenance, for all those important functions. So we want to be here to be in support of the school impact fee. We pay those fees when we build commercial developments for studios and roads, and we believe that it's appropriate to pay a fee for schools as well. We're willing to do that. We believe it is the right thing to do. We believe 366 is a good approach. We also support Senate Bill 45 in that we believe that there are times where it is a good nexus, where there are times where those things could work together. We are aware, having heard the testimonies, they have some concerns about how that would work and whether that path would inhibit their ability to meet the needs of the parks in addition to the schools. We have no position one way or the other on whether there should be a cap or not. I think the position of AGC is that we believe that time for development is needed to step up and be part of the solution in school construction solutions at the local level, but we're really willing to do that as part of either one of these bills. I'm having some questions to go.
I'd like to publicly thank Jessica and AGC. The recent deal that we got done is building on the Building Oregon Reserve Fund. It's a new, better funding source or adequate funding source for schools. AGC took a leadership position, and their members in
that being said, in our review of Senate Bill 366, there are a couple of matters that we think you should consider as you look at this bill. The first one has to do with equity. Watson Parsons do not reflect the variety of housing types that we see developed in any community. In fact, you'll find that a significant number of the housing units that are built in urban areas are single-family attached. They're multi-family. Watson Parsons do not reflect the variety of housing types in the community. So there is a question in our mind of equity when you look at the impacts of whether it be on parks or whether it be on schools. So we think that's something we at least ought to consider. The second thing that we would like to support to suggest that you consider is the administrative costs. Local governments have experience and processes in effect dealing with systems development charges or impact fees in many instances. However, those are collected at the building permit phase of development rather than in the creation of lots and parcels. We think that if you were to look at additional savings in terms of administrative costs, linking maybe the fee collection to building permits rather than lots and parcels, given that inequity, that there would be some additional savings that could be used for whether it be parks or whether it be for education. So those are a couple of comments, Mr. Chairman, of the committee that we would make as you continue to look at Senate Bill 366. Thank you.
Susan Robinson, are you
Coffin?
Okay. Amanda Rich, someone we know well here in the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee and the Capitol. Tom Gamble, Josephine Pope, and I'm getting to the bottom of my list at the perfect time. There's others that wish to testify, just please. You can testify either on 366 or Senate Bill 45. We've opened the hearing, and you're more than welcome. One of our members may have to leave because of commitment or I would say, except for me. Morning.
Good morning, Chair Decker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. And we are here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 45 and in support of Senate Bill 366. I've also submitted, for the record, testimony from the City of Hillsboro, the City of McMinnville, Willamette Lane Parks and Recreation District, and then also have submitted for your review a number of resolutions that were passed by cities and districts around the state. As you can tell, this is an issue of great interest to our members. I'm not going to take up your time, but I did want to make one comment. Chair Decker, you talked about the art of the possible. And frankly, to the extent that Senate Bill 45 contemplates trying to encourage cooperation between park districts or park agencies and school districts, I would submit that that is already happening throughout the state and that we don't need legislation to encourage it. These folks are already finding ways to make every dollar go as far as possible. And you heard about some examples with THPRD. Another great example that they have is that all of their pools are used by the schools in their area. The schools don't have any pools. They have eight pools, and they have an idea that they come together to use them. So I think you find that these folks are already working together. They consider themselves partners in the service to children and to their communities. And we just, again, we stand in support of 366 and in opposition to Senate Bill 45. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for hearing the testimony of the Senate Committee. I appreciate it. My name is Tom Gamble, and I must have got my name on the wrong list because I am from Forks Grove, and I realize sometimes it feels like it takes a couple hours to get into Beaver Canal. I'm here representing the City Council and the Resident escrow caps and the logistics of Senate Bill 45 just do not work in our jurisdiction. And I'm going to speak on behalf of the school district because we met with them yesterday talking about the partnerships with the synthetic field on Fort Grove High School using our system development charter. So I agree with Amanda. These conversations are well thought out and planned, but they're planned on a methodology that came about because we spent a lot of time putting together ISDC fees and charges. The problem in Forest Grove, probably similar to other districts and cities in Oregon, are this. The Forest Grove School District encompasses the city of Forest Grove, outlying areas, and the city of Cornelius. Cornelius has a particular problem in that they, half of their city, attends the Hillsborough School District. So just getting our arms around some kind of methodology that would incorporate Forest Grove School District, Forest Grove School District and the city of Cornelius does present some interesting conflicts and interest in terms of what the specific needs are of each community and how would we have coordinated that under the guise of this bill. So I rest with that. That point, and it's a little different than some of the things we've heard today, but I thank you for your time and appreciate this.
I am Josephine Cope, a Portland native, a member of the Portland Parks Foundation Board and Parks Board, and a former chair of each. I am speaking to you briefly in opposition to Senate Bill 45. I had a couple of divergent remarks that I wanted to mention before I get into my opposition, and that end I will largely skip because you've already heard it. But I've just returned for a month in two Latin American countries, wonderful countries, wonderful people, but countries with unnecessarily deplorable infrastructure, countries which have not invested adequately in the public realm as their populations have increased. We must not let that happen in Oregon. We must maintain a pay-as-you-go attitude as population increases. Secondly, political leadership. I don't mean to pass the buck, but two examples stand out. The leadership of Mayor Daley in Chicago and Mayor Bloomberg and former Governor Pataki in New York each recognize the economic, the environmental, and the social importance of parks, playgrounds, trails, greenways, open space, and they have led the way in acquiring hundreds of millions of dollars in funding these essential amenities. While I understand that we are neither Illinois nor New York, the dynamic is the same. Leadership from your corner is essential. And as I promised, I will not go into my opposition points for Senate Bill 45 because having been here since 9:30, I kept a little record as to how many times you've heard each one of them. But in closing, I did want to add one, and that has to do with my strong objection to the emphasis on tight connectivity. That is, the thought that in order to pay or be eligible for a school SDC, there have to be children in that household, or that in order for there to be a parks SDC, there has to be some connection documented on the part of the users of, well, you get what I mean, getting hung up here. That there has to be some documented connection between the payers at the SDC and how many times they use the gym at Woodstock Park. I believe that is counter to the philosophy upon which this country of community and democracy is built. An educated, healthy citizenry is in all our interest, and a healthy environment provided by parks is clearly within all our interest. So thank you for your concern, and please vote for fair, adequate, efficient funding for both parks and schools by approving Senate Bill 366 and rejecting Senate Bill 45. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
That was a wonderful statement. I want you to know I 100% agree with everything you said. Lifelong education.
Larry Santner. I'm the director of Portland Parks and Recreation. I must have gotten my name down on the wrong list as well. I'm here on behalf of Commissioner Dan Solslin and myself as director of parks. Sitting through the throughout this 2 hours, many of my remarks have been covered, but I wanted to give you a couple of specifics as to the importance of SDC Parks, SDC for City of Portland, and also the relationship that we have with Portland Public Schools and other four school districts that are releasing our Portland. Our parks, SDCs, were established in 1998. Since then, we have generated over $30 million of SDC monies that we have used and leveraged to acquire over 180 acres of parkland and natural areas and trail corridors. In the city of Portland, like anywhere else in the state, people love their parks. In the older section of the cities, we have pretty well-established parks. The rural areas, particularly outer east, outer northeast, where the tremendous growth is happening, and where land is still affordable, and many of our new immigrant populations and people with lower income are moving to, there are incredible inequities. And we need to address that. FCC funds are our only vehicles to address those inequities. In terms of partnership with public schools, our partnership with schools go back to the 30s. And currently, City of Portland Parks provides annually about $250,000 towards mowing, school, sports fields, $250,000 towards operating two of the school pools. We have five after-school programs in five schools in outer east areas, and we spend over $500,000 a year collaborating with them. We have a fantastic relationship, and we don't want to jeopardize that relationship over fighting over money. So I want to encourage you to approve Senate Bill 366 because it's very, very important that school districts have adequate funding to respond to their growth, and urge you to reject Senate Bill 45. Thank you.
Yes, I was on the wrong list apparently too. My name's Linda Robinson, and I'm a resident of Portland. I live in the outer east part of Portland that Zary was just referring to. And I wanted to emphasize the point of the problem with co-location. I live in the Park Rose School District, right adjacent to David Douglas, which is experiencing even more growth than Park Rose is. And when they tried to find a property for a new school recently, they had a very difficult time finding a parcel large enough to put just the school on, let alone a park. And one of the reasons that our schools are growing, the enrollment is growing so rapidly in that part of town, is that there's a lot of multifamily development going on along the light rail lines, and it's multi-story multifamily, and so it, you know, increasing enrollment doesn't necessarily mean there's land available. So they've struggled to find parcels big enough to put parks on, big enough to put schools on. So therefore that whole idea of basing it on units on housing rather than parcels becomes that's the point that really struck with me, and I wanted to reinforce that point. And the whole idea that, you know, where there are five school districts within the city of Portland, and when you get east of Portland, you've got a number of small cities, some of which are all within a single school district. So the Gresham School District incorporates more than just the city of Gresham. So you've got the reverse situation there, and trying to set up a fund, collection and distribution system that meets the needs and the differing needs of all those school districts and park districts is just a major problem.
Thank you very much. He often brings it up, I think, from his side. I have Sherry Hall. I'm not sure if she's testified. Bill, I believe, has left. Bill can submit a written testimony. And that is all I have. Please testify. I'm just, the school district nicely asked us to leave.
West Lynn, and the city council of the city of West Lynn has also reviewed and discussed SB 45, and as a result of that, I've been asked to urge your opposition to this legislation. And just a quick point that I think, one more flaw I guess I'd like to point out in 45, I think you've heard most of the salient points, and I'll provide my testimony as well, is also the issue of the way the reimbursement fees for some of these facilities could be encompassed into this into the methodologies. And traditionally, districts throughout the state, school districts throughout the state, have also used public recreation facilities to, in a sense, kind of sweeten the pot in order to entice maybe a favorable vote on a bond measure. And most of these public facilities have been taken into consideration as park providers look at where recreation facilities are needed. What our concern is that a SPC for the schools in a sharing situation with parks really, with such a limited scope, would actually remove a tool that a lot of school districts do use in order to gain support for bond measures. It just kind of, in a sense, provides a false sense of security that that funding is in great shape, but obviously goes a long ways to just diluting our ability to maintain our levels of services. Thanks. Other than that, just again, quickly, West Lynn, for example, has one of the highest SDCs in the state related to park SDCs. We're at a little over $8,000. Those fees were established back in 2002 when land was valued at $200,000 an acre. Right now, our property is property values in Sun City, West Lynn, are $600,000 per acre. There's no way we can generate revenues, even with our SDC, again, at one of the highest in the states, fast enough to keep up with the pace of development. For an example, it takes 74 new single-family homes in West Lynn to generate enough property to purchase 1 acre of parkland. Other than that, I think that's it. I'll submit written testimony, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your testimony. We really appreciate everyone's testimony. I think our goal is, maybe I don't want to speak for Senator Burdick or those who aren't here, but our goal is to move forward with Senate Bill 366. It is, just so folks know, votes are being counted in both the Senate and the House, and so it's appropriate to apply pressure on both bodies as we attempt to move Senate Bill 366 along its path. Has to make it through two chambers and two governors, and that's certainly my goal. And the bird seems to be nodding, and it's all about addition and votes as we move along. But thank you for all your testimony, and we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 45, Senate Bill 366. We will return to Senate Bill 366 down in Salem at the Capitol, and Senate close the public hearing on Senate Bill 44. And thank you. Thank you to Barbara. Her son is an Iraq war veteran who's at law school now, safely home. To Robin Wilton and Madden and Steve for helping us and Marina.